This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show. From Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist, here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Howdy, hi. It is 4:06 and 91 degrees here in the city. We get Mike back in the studio. He's out there controversing or whatever.
Well, no, everybody keeps asking me questions around here. My cherry tree, my lime tree, my fig tree, my baby bush.
You're popular.
I guess. I mean, hey, it's a safe subject.
You've always got an answer.
I do. Whether it's right or not, they'll never find out.
Don't matter. It sounds good.
Oh, I tell them the truth all the time. So, anyway, welcome to the show. I hope you're listening. I hope everything is going well. And, the weather prediction that I heard all morning was, it'll be 84 today.
Yeah.
Right. Well, it was 91 in the parking lot when I just parked. So, you know, what the heck? The thermometer must have broken or something.
No, it's just the pavement out there.
Oh, the pavement. Ah, I see. Anyway, thank you for listening. If you have a question about your garden or your trees or your rose bushes or your lawn, you can call 673-4464. Tell me your problem, and I'll try to give you a solution. And most of the time, I can come up with a solution. So 673-4464.
What'd you bring in with you?
Ah, this is a baby black Spanish olive. It's an olive tree that actually grows here in Oregon.
Oh, right.
The cold and the snow don't hurt it.
Don't hurt.
The first olive tree I got years and years ago, I got it out of California where they have all the olive groves.
Mm-hmm.
And I stopped at one of these roadside buyer olives here. Well, they had some olive trees, so I bought one and brought it back up to Oregon.
And
it did really well during the summer, and then it got cold, and it didn't do so hot. It just kind of went wah.
Kind of like I do in the fall.
Yeah, I go wah. So right away I did, and then over the years I started. I'm always reading and trying to find out what's new on the horizon there.
Yeah.
And I was reading about this black Spanish olive that is cold tolerant, and of course they love, all of them love the sun. And so I bought I don't know, four or five of them. I found them somewhere, I forget. And so we've had them ever since, and I plant them in landscape jobs, and of course they're for sale in the nursery. This is just a tiny one. I got about 30 tiny ones. It's in 1 gallon can, when I say tiny. Then I've got some that are in 15-gallon cans that are probably, good 4 feet, maybe 5 feet tall, and they're a pretty good-sized stem, and when I'm designing jobs or people sometimes give me free rein, just make it pretty, Mike. Okay, I can do that. And so I'll stick an olive tree in there if they have the room, and they'll go, gosh, that's a nice-looking tree. What is it? I tell them it's a black Spanish olive. Will it get olives? You betcha. It gets olives. It always gets olives. And
what do olives look like when they're on the tree? I mean, they're
little
not
round green things. Olives.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
but
it.
They're no okay. They look just like what coming out of the can. Then.
Well, yeah. Only they're fresh. They're fresher on the tree.
I didn't know if they had shells or what.
No shells. They have a pit in the inside, so if you chomp down real hard, you'll break your teeth.
Take much for these old
you
teeth.
You wouldn't want to do that. But I've planted over the years, a dozen of them or so around Douglas County. And the first one I planted, it was probably 3 feet tall, maybe four feet tall when I planted it. And now it's about a good 12, 14, well, maybe not 14, but a good 12 feet tall. And it's bearing olives year after year.
Nice.
Yeah, it is. And I just wanted to, I'm going to talk about olives here in my broadcast today. The subject matter is bonsai. I'm going to talk about bonsai. It's not bonsai, it's bonsai. And, the different types of trees and plants that are easier to do. And, the collection that I have of built up over the years. I'll tell you a little bit about that.
Yeah, a whole bunch of them.
And where to get this stuff. And, not necessarily my nursery. You can go out in the get some really, really pretty ones, and I'll talk about that a little bit. But
okay.
Anyway, again, question, call 673-4464, and we'll get right on it for you. Now, bonsai, and it's spelled B-O-N-S-A-I, means, and this is a definition, it means dwarfed tree growing in a pot. That's it. And bone, that part of it means tray or pot in Japanese, and sai means to plant. Hence the word bonsai.
So a pot tree growing.
Yeah, it's a pot tree. Not in the sense of American pots trees, but in the sense of Japanese trees.
Ah.
So bonsai means literally planted in a tray. That's it. Or dwarf dish garden is some loose translations mean. But it ain't that simple. This is not for the novice gardener, unless you are really going to be diligent and learn first before you attack this particular art form. And it is an art form. And but you have to know the basics of how plants grow, how to care for them, and the proper pruning techniques. And once you have a good base knowledge of those kinds of things, then you could kind of graduate into the bonsai world, because it's you really got to know your stuff to make them survive and be beautiful. And it takes a few years and a lot of mistakes, and I've made my share of them, a lot of mistakes in getting what you want as an end result. So that's what we'll talk about today. So if you want to try bonsai, start with inexpensive plants. Don't
go to the top of the line.
Don't go to the top of the line and say, "Oh, I've never had one of these before. I'd love to have one. I'll buy that $400 one." Okay? And I have talked people out of that.
Can we hold on to that thought?
If we have to, yes.
All right. We got a phone call. Hey, you're on the air with Mike.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
So far, so good. We're in an air-conditioned little room.
Oh, I'm out on the back porch. It's a little warm, a little bit warm. Yeah. Hey, I have photinia.
Yes.
And I'm not trying to make a hedge out of it. I'm just trying to do similar to what the co-op is doing with their photinia. And it's growing it in blocks so that it, you know, I can trim it.
Uh-huh.
Do I need to be concerned about sprays?
Is there something wrong with them? I mean, do you see bugs or fungus or anything like that?
No.
Uh-huh.
But I've been advised that I should spray it often with like a 3-in-1 oil or something like that.
What was the purpose in that?
Well, I'm not quite sure.
Well, I wouldn't spray anything on it unless there was, you know, you noticed that there was something attacking it, or you know, a fungus of sorts, or little critters crawling all over it. I don't know that I would do that.
Well, I see areas. I have a drip system, and so they get plenty of water, but I see areas that I'm guessing don't get water, and I see what to me looks like black spot, but I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, black spot occurs when there's too much water, for the most part. On average, yes. And I've planted photinia in places where they never get any water for forever, except when it rains in the winter, and they do quite well. They're a very tough plant, and, you know, I don't know how often your drip is on, but if even with a drip, you could overwater if it's on every day for, say, 20 minutes or something like that. Because it doesn't have a chance to drain, doesn't have a chance to breathe. You rot the roots, and when the roots are rotten, and I'm talking about the hair roots, those are the roots that actually take the nutrition from the soil and send it up into the plant to grow new leaves, etc. If you rot them off, then the nutrition level drops significantly, and then you have a weak plant, and anything that comes along can put the kibosh on it.
Okay. Speaking of roots, what kind of travel should I expect out of the root system?
How long they've been in?
Actually, I bought these from you. And they're doing quite well.
Good. Yeah. Hey, thanks for the ad.
Yeah. They're only a couple years old.
Uh-huh.
So, they're 3-4 feet tall.
So they seem to be growing well.
Oh, yeah. They're doing
good.
Great.
Good. good. Well, you know what? If you don't see anything bad happening to them, I would not, you know, there are sprays that supposedly prevent things from happening, but you wouldn't want to do it this time of year. It's too darn hot.
Sure.
You want to, if you, unless it's an emergency. If it's an emergency and something's attacking them, yeah, you spray them early in the morning before the sun comes up, and hopefully that won't burn the leaves. But in hot weather like this, anything you spray on there, like chemical-wise, is going to burn the snot out of the leaves, and you're going to see it real quick.
So, okay. I did it way early spring, and I'm just wondering if it's going to be a constant.
No, it should not be. It should not be. It would be as you see a problem, you go ahead and spray.
Super. Okay. Thank you.
You're sure welcome. Thanks for the call.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Thank you. All right. You want to continue your thought or take a break?
I don't even know where my thought is. I'll take a break.
All right. We'll take a break and I won't have to interrupt again.
Yeah.
Here we are. We'll be right back with Mike Winters, Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
That's us?
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Oh, we're hacking in a coffin, and we're going to carry on with the show here.
Yeah, regardless if we just drop over. Don't worry about us. We're good.
Oh, geez.
Oh, anyway, love it. We're talking about bonsai, and yes. And as I was getting to the point, we had an interruption with a phone call, so consequently I have to take those. They are my priority. But if you want to try bonsai, like I was beginning to say, start with inexpensive plants, like a small juniper. Junipers are very tough, and any mistakes that you make probably won't kill the plant. My first one was a dwarf mugo pine, which is also a very tough plant to kill. We got another call.
We do.
Okay, I might get through one page. You never know.
There you go. You're on the air with Mike here.
Yeah, see, I got a question, Mike.
Yes.
I've got a prune tree that's 5 or 6 years old, semi-dwarf, and it is just dropping all the prunes off of it this year. Over, is it too dry or what's gone?
Do you water it much?
No.
Good, because it doesn't need a whole bunch of water. And it's been in the ground how long?
Oh, 5 or 6 years.
5 or 6 years. And now in previous years, how did it do?
Well, it didn't have very many, period. This is the most prunes it's ever had.
Uh-huh.
And 3/4 of them are on the ground.
Huh. Can you water it? I mean, do you have...
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what I would do, because I think, you know, it's been so stinking dry that if you've never watered it, it wouldn't hurt to give it a couple of good soakings to get it through the next month or so until, you know, things cool off. Unless I looked at the tree, I couldn't really tell you why they're dropping. But, you know, that's kind of a natural thing as a survival technique for any plant, you know, because it takes a lot of energy to produce a prune, and the tree is expending that energy. But if the conditions like dryness or, you know, drought and heat and all that are overwhelming to the tree or the shrub or whatever it is, it will drop the fruit because the tree itself wants to survive, and it can't afford to expend that extra life to fruit formation. It has to, it's kind of a self-survival kind of deal. So that might be it. I wouldn't worry about it. You don't see any significant animal damage or critters or anything like that, do you?
Oh, no.
Okay.
No.
Well, give it 5 gallons of water every week and see what happens.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right.
Yeah, you know, they just fruit trees or, you know, vegetables, anything like that that produces an edible fruit or even a non-edible fruit.
Yeah.
If the conditions are so extreme, so dry or so wet or whatever, cold, mm-hmm. et cetera, it's going to drop whatever it's producing so that, it like I say, it has a self-survival component already built into the tree, and it can't afford to expend that energy to form fruit because it wants to live to the next year. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm not saying it has a desire. It's just
it's just there.
It's just there, right? It's part of the genetics of the tree or the shrub or what have you. And the same thing can happen with tomatoes or cucumbers or, you know, watermelons, et cetera. If conditions are really extreme, whether it's lack of water or too much water, they'll get rid of vegetable. They'll get rid of their produce, mm-hmm. so that the plant itself can survive. So
interesting.
Yeah, and you know, this is just stuff that I learned from all these years being in business, watching this stuff and seeing, because we've been through several drought cycles now.
Yeah,
and in dry, hot years, and not that this whole year has been that way, but the last month or so it's been heating up pretty good, and the ground is still very dry. I mean, if you dig down, if you dig down 2 or 3 feet, mm-hmm. For the most part, you don't find any moisture.
Yeah, there's a lot of dust down there.
Yeah, exactly, and that's what the root system has to survive in. So it's just a conservation effort on the tree itself, on the plant itself. So
cool.
Yeah, it is. So. I was talking about bonsai.
Yes, you were.
I might get through a whole page of notes here. I don't know.
Come on, interrupt him.
Yeah, I love calls. Don't worry about me. I can do this next week if you don't get it all in today. But as I was saying, if you start out with an inexpensive juniper and you want to bonsai it and you want to learn about it, that's the way to go because they're cheap and they're tough and they're not going to give you a whole bunch of trouble, and you can't make a mistake pruning them as long as you leave some needles on it so it can actually produce food for itself, that kind of thing. You know, it's called photosynthesis. Okay.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's a word for you.
Oh, it's a big one. And like I said, my first one was a dwarf mugo pine, which is in the same category as juniper. They're just tough stuff. They can grow out of concrete, for crying out loud. And you can hardly kill them even if you want to. But step one in bonsai is you have to have a vision of what you want to create. So it is artistic in that way. It's you get a tree and you look at it and some people say, oh, that's a tree or that's a shrub and I'm just mm-hmm. going to let it grow. But there's some folks that are interested and have an artistic ability. They want that tree to be a little bit different. They want it to be a little bit exotic. And the ultimate in exotic is a bonsai tree, something that's in a small pot that looks very, very old and trimmed in a kind of a different way so that it exposes its stem and all that kind of thing. That's why you have to have a vision before you even attack that plant with pruning shears. You want to make sure that, you know, I want it to do this or I want it to have this. And you got to have help in getting that vision. So you get a good book on bonsai, and there are many on the market, or you get on the wacky internet there, and they'll Google it. Yeah, Google it. Yeah, my cell phone Googles stuff all the time. My flip phone. At any rate, look under bonsai, and you're going to see quite a bit of information, and your handy dandy computer can do that research. But there are books you can actually hold in your hand, and with good photos and techniques and instructions on how to cut, when to cut, how to fertilize, what kind of soil it needs. I mean, the whole nine yards. It goes from A to Z, and so that you can have success with that. Now, and if you don't want to do that, just go get some first-hand information at a nursery, like, Wintergreen Nursery. Yeah, okay, I do it.
Located in Winston.
Yeah, just south of, never mind. or if you got a friend who is experienced in creating bonsai, talk to them. See what they have. See what they do and how they do it and why they do it. But again, you could give two people the same identical looking plant that's just a plant and say, okay, both of you bonsai, these and go your separate ways and come back in a month and we'll see what each one of you did. And it would probably be a total different picture of each one.
Wow.
You know, because one person will say, yeah, I want it to do this, and I want to wire it up and twist the branches in a certain way. And the other person will probably could probably just say, well, I just want it really short and tight and develop the trunk structure so it has a bigger diameter, you know, whatever.
A big booty.
Yeah, and you bring them back and say, wow, you know, there's two different styles here.
Yeah.
So the style is in your head. The style is in your particular vision, and like I say, sometimes you don't know how to get started. Well, that's where the literature comes in. That's where the internet and the books and all that, and that comes in, and you say, ah, I see why. Now I understand this. Mm-hmm. Now, or yeah, I can do that, and this is when I do it, and it goes on from there.
Nice.
So, yeah. You get, like I say, that information, educate yourself. And have a vision, and you can do it. Now, most any shrub or tree is a candidate for bonsai. Some of them are better candidates than others, but you can bonsai anything. And you can use azaleas. I've seen some very beautiful azaleas that have bonsai that are, you know, 40 years old. And they're 18 inches tall and 10 inches wide, and they kind of sweep one way or another, and their branches are layered, and the trunk is about 2 inches in diameter in a very small pot, and they're 40 years old. I mean, that's, you know, people think, oh, azaleas, they're tender. No, they're not. They grow wild in the mountains in Oregon, for crying out loud. And you don't have to baby them, but there are some basics, like I say, that you'll have to study and learn and create and make mistakes, and either overwatering, underwatering, incorrect pruning at the wrong time, you know, any of those things, over-fertilization, all those things can be done, because bonsai usually is in a small dish, and there's not very much room for mistakes when you are watering or fertilizing, that kind of thing, because you can damage it either way. You can get it too dry or way too wet, and you got to kind of get a happy medium, and depending on the type of plant you use, some mediums are one way, and some mediums for the particular plant go, you know, swing the other way on the pendulum. So that's the thing. But, you know, azaleas, what I really like are conifers, pines, spruces, firs, those kinds of things. And then Japanese maples make great bonsai, or even fruit trees. I've got a fruit tree I'm working on right now, and I pruned it really heavy years ago, and then I've kind of let it go for a few years to see what happened. And so I got multiple stems on this thing, and then multiple stems have apples all over them, and it's only about 4 feet tall, maybe. And so this winter, I'm going to give it major surgery, take it out of its big pot, trim the roots, and put it in a bonsai pot. And because what I wanted to do was increase the stem diameter, the trunk. I want the bonsai, when the trunk is large in diameter, it gives it the look of an old tree.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that only happens when you prune the top and keep it short, and the sides and keep it short, so the energy doesn't go to growth on the leaves, yep, or the needles. It grows into the diameter of the particular plant.
Makes sense.
Yeah, and it takes a while to do that. It's not, none of this is overnight stuff. It just ain't. But any plant's fair game. But like I say, some are easier than others. And like I say, junipers are easy, but geraniums are very hard. I know, because I killed one. And but I wanted to try it. And during the summer, I pruned it way down. Regular geranium, I picked one out and said, this ought to make a cool bonsai. And I picked one out, pruned the snot out of it way down. And it grew new leaves, and the leaves were smaller because I had hacked it so severely.
Yeah.
And then I put it in a small bonsai pot, and it was doing really, really well. And the problem was, it was about October, and it was still outside, and I thought, oh, it's probably going to get cold.
Yeah.
And it got cold quicker than what I thought, and we had one of those quick overnight freezes, and the next morning I saw it was all brown.
Oh, that quick?
Brown. I mean, and the stems were, you could touch them and they would fall apart.
God.
So had I got it into the greenhouse the day before, it would have been fine. But I'm going to try it again. I learned some things from that. But you can do it with that. I was just saying, you know, to what extent can we do this? Can we do it with flowers? Yeah, you can do it with flowers. You can do it with the fir trees, pine trees, and everything else. But anyway, the history of bonsai, and I'm going to do a little bit of history here. The origins of bonsai, I guess, come from China. About 1,500 years ago,
China.
Yeah, of course, according to the literature that I've been reading. And then about 700 years ago, Japan invaded China and had a war with China. Yeah, this is a real deal. And some of the spoils in that war were the valuable bonsai that the Chinese emperors and big shots had in their private homes. Well, the Japanese confiscated them and took them back to Japan because they were so beautiful.
Gotcha. Japanese actually won that war?
Yes. Yeah, they got the spoils, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a long, long time ago, you know. I mean, hundreds of years ago. Yeah. And, you know, that's what they did. And so now everybody, when they think of bonsai, they think of Japan. Because actually Japan has kind of taken over that world because of their land mass and the amount of people. There's not, you don't have an acre or two in Japan to play with. You got a small yard that's 10 by 10 or 10 by 15 or something. And so they create their own mini gardens with bonsai and waterfalls and things like that. And they have their own landscape right there. It's miniature, but it's there, it's alive, and it's beautiful. And they do some outrageously beautiful work.
I know my history like our president, I guess.
Well, I'm trying to teach you something here, Dale, if you just listen once in a while. You know? You know, bonsai, like I said, is they're considered works of natural art. You know, like some people are Rembrandt and they do paintings, and some people are musical geniuses and they invent songs and sing songs, and they're with us for a long time. But, you know, it's a natural work of art, and you have to have a kind of a flair for it, yes, and it's hard to teach. I've taught bonsai classes, and people kind of get it because they're interested. The people that attend the class are pretty interested to begin with. They just want to know some of the tricks of the trade, if you will, and I've showed them that and how to do this and how to do that, and I give them demonstrations on how, and they gasp when I prune, and I go, oh, won't that kill the plant? No. It's that plant's getting ready to get bonsai. Don't worry. Come back in 10 years and see what it looks like.
He likes it.
Yeah. Right. Oh, gosh. But, you know, it's a living art form, and it requires patient care for many years. And you got to be patient with them. It's not, like I say, an overnight success. Now, some people see a twisted tree or a shrub that is mangled as a candidate for the burn pile.
Mm-hmm.
And while others see that same plant that's mangled or twisted or whatever as a potential for great beauty in a beautiful pot sitting on their patio or deck. And like I say, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. So to really see beautiful twisted trees, you can drive to the coast. Go up Highway 101 and you know, get up there around Florence and other places where there's the road, and on one side of the road there's the ocean 400 feet down, and on the other side of the road there's this cliff right next to your passenger door if you're headed north. But you'll see these pine trees and sometimes a fir tree growing out of cracks in the rock, and they're kind of bent and arching and reaching for the sun, and the wind of course on the coast batters them every year and smashes them around. Those are perfect candidates for bonsai. The problem is you'd have to stop traffic, climb the cliff, and get them and take them. Now, I have done that. Not on 101, no.
Oh.
But I have climbed things to get a particular tree out
Can
of
Can we get into that after this?
Okay.
All right. More rock climbing.
Yes.
With Mike Winters next. Best Country News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All righty, we are back.
We are back.
What about the rock climbing now?
Oh, the rock climbing. Well, you know, I never climbed rocks along 101 on the coast because it's a little bit busy with traffic.
Might frown on that.
Yeah, but up in the high country, up in, you know, North Umpqua, up on Mount Thielson and stuff, I've been on the top of Mount Thielson twice.
Wow.
Yeah, and there's some really neat bonsai up there. But when you're holding on to a rock and you're trying to dig a bonsai out of the side of a mountain, it's really difficult. So you pass up the bonsai and hang on to
hang on.
But that's where you find some of these beauties. They're just gorgeous. They've been battered by the wind, the snow, and everything else. And they've
got to be tough.
Oh, yeah. And they're probably 50, 60 years old. And they're 2 feet tall and kind of twisted and gnarled. And
wow.
You go, wow, man, that would be so cool if I could get that. Well, I tried. I tried a couple that were kind of like in that situation, but I couldn't get all the root out. But I took it and I did my magic with my B1 and all that, and it still didn't survive.
Still didn't. Yeah.
So I switched gears and went to a different part of the high country where there's pumice soil, and it's all those survive. There's not a problem because there's no rocks. It's just pumice.
Yeah,
and you just dig them out, and boom, there you got a ball of roots in about 10 seconds. That's all it takes, 10 seconds, and you got a tree. And you stick it in the back of your pickup truck, cover it with wet bark mulch, and you're good to go.
Nice.
Yeah. But
Do you sell those puppies, too?
Oh, yeah, I got them out back. I got probably, several hundred in different stages of development, and I don't want to put them all up front because there are some sticky-fingered bad people around who like to steal things.
Oh, yeah.
And those are kind of exotic and kind of cool-looking, so, whoa, that must be valuable. Let's steal that.
Even if you put a high-price sticker on it.
Especially if you put a high-price sticker on it, like $125,000.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, that hurt me bad.
Oh.
I felt so bad about that. I still feel bad about it. And that was 20 years ago, for crying out loud. Oh, gosh. But when you see these twisted trees and all that, you can really make something out of it. The twistier they are, the uglier they are, the more mangled, I guess would be a good word. That's gonna be the one you want, because and don't get something very large, because usually the very large ones don't work. I've taken some that are, three and a half feet tall and have success. Anything larger than that, the root mass is so big you couldn't get enough root when you dug them to make sure that they survived. And I don't want to kill a tree just to see if I can. I mean, I've killed my share, but I don't want to do it on purpose. I want it to survive because I think it's really cool.
But on the other hand, you brought some trees back to life.
Yes, I did. I have. And like I say, at the coast, there's lots of wind and rain and all that. So you're gonna get some nicely shaped specimens in there. Now, but in the Cascades, which is the opposite direction, you'll see what heavy snow and fallen trees can do to a small tree. But I prefer the Cascades because you can find a 30-year-old tree that's like a foot tall, 15 inches tall, with a trunk that might be 2 or 3 inches in diameter, and it's growing sideways because 25 years ago, one of the bigger trees in the kind of within range fell down for whatever reason and crushed it.
Oh.
Well, just because it crushed it, it didn't kill it. Because those trees, if they have an inch to see the sun, they kind of grow in that direction. So consequently, you come across this big old snag that fell down, like I say, 20, 25 years ago, and you'll see a little bit of greenery, say, sticking out from underneath it. And you go, oh, what the heck's that? But that's what I do anyway. What the heck's that? And there's a little mountain hemlock or a small pine trying to escape being crushed. And so when you get, and by that time the log that fell on is pretty rotten, so you can move it away, and you uncover this beautiful thing that was bent and crushed and ugly, but it when you can dig it up and it's beautiful. and a little bit of tiny bit of pruning, and take some of the little dead branches off, put it in a bonsai pot, and they're gorgeous. And that's probably the poor thing's probably 30 years old itself, but it's only a foot tall.
But it's a survivor.
It's a survivor. They do survive up in that high country. You know, I prefer like mountain hemlock and lodgepole pine because they're very slow growers. They grow in, you know, pumice soil and are very, very easy to dig and transplant to a pot. They're simple. And the best bonsai collection that I've ever seen of all sorts of bonsai is at the Weyerhaeuser World Headquarters, which is between Tacoma and Seattle off of I-5. Mm-hmm. And there'll be a big green sign, exit 10 whatever AB, and it says, Weyerhaeuser World Headquarters Bonsai Garden.
Really?
Yeah, and so you take that exit, and it's about a half a mile off I-5, and they've got world-renowned bonsais from all over the world that people have donated, and it's a roped-in, fenced-in garden because they're very, very valuable. And some of the trees are 200 and 300 years old.
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow.
They're fantastic. And you can't get near them. They have they're like their own special little I don't want to say cave, but a squared off area, and they sit on a beautiful marble bench or something like that, and then they got this big giant rope out there that's 5-10 feet away from the tree, so you view it from 10 feet away. You cannot touch them. You cannot.
Nobody's going to steal those puppies.
No, they've got armed guards there. and people over the years and institutions and everything else have donated these trees.
Nice.
And it's an amazing thing. I've been there twice, and if I ever have the nerve to go to Seattle again, I'll stop it again.
That may be the 12th or never.
Yeah, you never know. Oh, gosh. But I'm going to go backwards here. The reason I like the, like I said, the hemlock and the lodgepole is because they are slow growers. The needles on a mountain hemlock are very, very short. They grow very, very slow. So they're a compact tree to begin with. And I've transplanted over the years maybe 50 of them that I've taken. And I've got some of my collection at home and some of my collection at the nursery. And I've used some of them in landscaping jobs from time to time.
Oh,
not
sure.
Very many.
Yeah.
But in a certain location, even here, you know, coming from 5,000 feet or 5,500 feet down here to 700 feet, you think, oh, it's too hot. And so you kind of plant them in the shade. You make sure they get a lot of shade in the hot afternoon, morning sun, afternoon shade. Good draining soil, and they very seldom even need water, except if they're in a pot. If they're in the ground, they very seldom need water. But in the pots, of course, they have to stay damp because the bonsai pots are small. I should have brought some. You know what I'm talking about when I say bonsai
pots?
Yeah,
brought them in.
Yeah, they're shallow and not so big.
Yeah.
And what that does, it produces very little growth on your specimen little tree in there, and so consequently it just ages, if you will, more quickly. And that's what you do.
Makes older than what it is.
Yes.
Looks slow.
Yes. Well, I've got one at my house that's about 120 years old.
Mm.
Yeah. And when I dug it, I was up on the side of this mountain, way up on the side of this mountain, and I was walking down. I was done for the day, right? We'd already got some.
Yeah.
And I always get a permit. I mean, I'm not doing this illegal. I stop at the Glide Ranger station and get a commercial.
It's all above board.
Above board. I don't want some Forest Service guy stopping my truck and say, let me see your permit. I'm going to arrest you and put you in jail for stealing these ugly trees.
After a concerned citizen
turned me in. But I don't bump into concerned citizens because no concerned citizen in their right mind would go where I go. I might meet Daniel Boone out there, or what's that other guy with all the hair?
Oh, Davy Crockett?
Well, the other one. Never mind. Big old giant guy. But anyway.
The guy with the beard?
Yeah, that one.
I can't remember his name.
Yeah. But, mountain hemlock, they look old when they're like 5 years old. I mean, that's just their rough surroundings and atmosphere that they have to survive in. So consequently, they're short, they're stout, And like I say, they could get damaged from a limb or another tree, you know, bouncing off them in a snowstorm. And usually they're covered by about 5 feet of snow or 6 feet of snow most of the winter.
Wow.
And one time I took my wife up. I said, oh, let's go to this area. So we get up there, and it's raining a little bit in Roseburg. This is Labor Day weekend.
Uh-huh.
And so we're up there, and the higher we get, about Tokidi, that rain started turning into a little kind of slushy rain.
Yeah.
By the time I got to where I was going at the end of this one road,
yeah,
it was snowing. There was 6 inches of snow on the ground. And,
jeez.
And she said, are you crazy? I said, yeah, I am. Walk up. I know the trail. So we go walking up the trail, and the trail kind of disappeared.
Uh-oh.
And I started getting a little, and you couldn't see much because it was really snowing hard. Consequently, I didn't get any that day. But, you know, I think we better turn back and get back down here. And, you know, we got down to the truck, and we started driving down. By Tokidi, the rain had stopped, and the sun was coming out.
Isn't that odd?
Yeah, very odd. Very odd. Those clouds hang on the top there. Do we have another break?
We do. One more time.
Uno más.
All right, right back with Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio, 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
We're discussing age.
Age and how not to get it.
We are back here with Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show. About 6 minutes left here,
well,
Mike.
I got 3 pages of notes here. I guess I'm going to have to do a second show on this, but that's okay. Maybe nobody will get bored. But My second favorite bonsai tree is the lodgepole pine.
Ooh.
Again, for the same reasons. They're slow growing, they're tough, they grow in odd shapes and all that, and they're just tougher than nails. And I find, like I say, the best of both of those species, the mountain hemlock and the lodgepoles, at about 5,000 or 6,000 foot elevation up in the North Umpqua. And if you go higher than 5,000 or 6,000 and actually climb like up Mount Thielson or Mount Bailey or something like that, the bonsai are really pretty, but there are few of them. They get fewer. The higher you go up, the fewer there are.
Ah, they don't like height.
No, they don't. There's what you call a timber line. That's it. That's where
that's where the word comes from.
That's where the trees stop. But anyway, they're very
See
pretty.
What you learn here?
Yeah. Hey, I'm giving you a pretty good lessons here. But and even though I get these odd-shaped trees, I still do pruning and shaping with wire. I wire the limbs maybe to twist them in a different way, but not as much with other varieties. I kind of really put the wire to some of the pines simply because they're limber. Their little branches are limber, and you use copper wire, and copper wire won't hurt the tree. And you when you wrap a limb, for instance, and then you wrap it, and then you twist it in the way you want to go, the copper stays that way, but you don't wrap it tight. There's space for that limb to grow, so you're not going to girdle the tree. And after two or three seasons of growing that way, you can take the wire off, and the tree is then growing naturally in the way that you had it wired or bent. So that's, and there's lots of books on that kind of, everything I'm talking about has got a book written about it. So you can do that. And the pruning, you know, like I say, the beauty is in the eye of the beholder. You just prune it the way you think it should look or the way you want it to look. And and you'll come out pretty good. Now I've done junipers and different pines. I've done an azalea or two. I haven't done a rhodi yet, but I need a rhodi with smaller leaves. Big leafed shrubs or trees don't do as well as mini leaves. I've got a a dwarf elm that is probably good 4 feet tall, and I got it in a very large bonsai pot. And when I bought it, and they're dwarf, they don't grow very large. The leaves are about as big as your small fingernail. That's how big the leaves are.
Right?
But there's a bunch of them, and I grew it for about 3 or 4 years before I found a pot that I wanted to put it in.
Yeah.
And the pot is probably 3 feet long, a foot and a half wide, and maybe 10 inches deep.
Pretty good size.
It's a big pot.
Yeah.
It cost me $165 for the pot. Yeah. They're expensive. It was right out of Japan, imported, all that
China.
Kind of stuff. No, it wasn't Chinese, but it was Japan.
Japan.
Yes. And it's been in that pot for, probably 5 years at least, 6 years maybe. And I prune it lightly every year. And in that pot, it's probably, it's a good 5 feet tall, but it's really a cool-looking tree. And like I say, it's got the... Everything's dwarf about it. It doesn't grow fast. It's beautiful. The leaves are small, easy to prune, easy to take care of. And I only put a $5,000 price tag on that one. But it's locked behind a locked gate.
Ain't nobody
going to get it.
They
have to pull the whole fence down to get it.
We'll have to refresh some people's memories next week.
Yeah, right. I'm not going to. But, it's we have in our area a real good climate for this type of thing. It's not hot and dry like maybe Eastern Oregon or the desert regions, and it's not super wet like the coast. I mean, we're in the best of both worlds. I don't know if you've lived here all your life, maybe you don't think about it that way, but go someplace else and see how things are there, the weather, the vegetation, the congestion. And
yes.
Come back to Douglas County and you kiss the ground. You say, I love Douglas County, man.
I love the trees.
I love the trees and the mountains and everything else. So, having been in some places like that, I like to come back.
Southern California.
Yeah, right. I've been through that a few times. and you can actually get a bonsai down there, I'm sure. Oh, gosh. But when you're pruning, the frequent pruning a little bit at a time is always needed. And there's some things that I've let go just to see what would happen. And I need to prune them. So thanks for listening. I got more stuff I can share with you next week on Bonsai.
And more stories.
I hope you enjoyed it. I did.
Where you located there, Mike?
Highway 99 south of Winston. And we have big green roofs on all our buildings. You can't miss it. We're about a half mile south of Winston on the left-hand side. Across from the, it was a marijuana field last year. Now it's back to alfalfa, I think. But it's at the intersection of Garden, whatever road and Highway 99.
All right. We'll catch you next week.
Thank you.
Take care.